From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2003 when the New York Harbor School opened. It was a school offering both core subjects and a maritime education, with students traditionally going out into the harbor of New York City every Tuesday and Thursday. The school has referred to the harbor as an outdoor laboratory. This past September, Bill Clinton visited the harbor school to tout the school's involvement with the Billion Oyster Project, a 20-year undertaking focused on repopulating that harbor with oysters. By the fall of 2016, Rochester might have its own version of the New York Harbor School. It's called the Rochester River School, with an aim to reconnect our city to the water. Rochester is, after all, a water city, even if it doesn't always seem that way. The organizers of the Rochester River School have an ambitious plan to teach students, eventually grades 5 through 12. It's all about place-based, ecocentric education, moving outside the classroom when possible, and studying our natural resources. This hour, we'll learn about the process of opening a new school that seeks to push the boundaries a bit, and we'll hear from the founder of the New York Harbor School as well. My guests for the hour in studio include the co-founders of the New York Harbor School, of the Rochester River School. That's Joel Helfrich and Jerickson Pichardo. Joel, thanks for being here. And Jerickson, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And on the line with us from New York is Murray Fisher, founder of the New York Harbor School. Murray, thank you for taking the time for us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Congratulations on your success, Murray. I want to go back just a little bit to the beginning. On you opened in 2003, and I did my best to kind of get a look at what your goals and missions were, but give me a sense for what your mission was when you opened.
I mean, essentially, I saw a need, which was I was working in the environmental community for 3 years, and I didn't see the diversity and representation that had drawn me into the environmental community and especially to New York City. I didn't see that represented in the sort of professional class. And so I was wondering, why are more young kids from New York City not going into careers related to water, whether that's environmental law or marine science or boat driving, or the entire lots of jobs in that area and in the port. And it turned out that there was really not a good pipeline for those kids into those industries, and started asking around and saying, why not a school about New York Harbor? And that was sort of how it all began.
Did you have to go through a lot of red tape to get it done?
We had to go through a lot of red tape, as anyone could imagine. Starting a public school in New York City is just about as hard as you may imagine it to be. But the advantage we had was that Mayor Bloomberg at the time was closing down and phasing out the largest, worst-performing public high schools. And so they had targeted several schools that they were going to phase out and replace them with small, theme-based schools. And so we were part of a process within the Department of Education. We were one of 86 applicants for a new school that year. 8 were approved. And we opened up in the old Bushwick High School that was phasing out.
Okay, so this is back in 2003. Did you open as 9 to 12?
We opened just as a ninth grade on the fourth floor of the Bushwick High School, and we added 120 students each year.
Okay, and now you are a high school, is that correct?
Correct. We're a high school, and now we're out on Governor's Island. We had always said that we wanted to have a location directly on the water because that was an essential element of a maritime-based high school. So we moved to Governor's Island in 2010.
Talking to Murray Fisher, founder of the New York Harbor School that has been touted for many of its different approaches to education. And Murray, when I was growing up, I think for most students, most listeners to this program right now, growing up, much of your public school education was sitting at a desk somewhere. And that model, as Ken Robinson and many other educational analysts around the world have pointed out, goes back a couple of centuries. It hasn't changed all that much. Do you view the educational model that we see in a lot of schools as a little bit outdated in that regard?
I think there's just a lot of things that education needs to adapt to try and, first of all, it needs to think of how can it engage kids. It needs to think about what are the jobs that we want to be training kids for. It wants to, and so, you know, we saw this as a way to capitalize on what we believed was one of the most exciting and largest and richest resources in the New York City area, which was the harbor. And so it wasn't as much about necessarily that, going against the traditional in the classroom. It was more just that we saw this huge opportunity that we wanted to capitalize on. And it's been a struggle to figure out how do we get kids out, get them excited about the harbor, train them relevant skills for going into these marine-focused careers, prepare them for college while still doing the core academics that the colleges want to see here and that are necessary to be a competitive applicant to college. So I wouldn't argue necessarily that we figured it all out, because it is, you know, it's always a challenge to try and do it all. But we've certainly sort of stumbled upon a really exciting and engaging way to get kids from very diverse backgrounds on career paths related to the water.
How do you choose your students, or how do you end up with the students in each class?
It's a really interesting and complicated model that I would take up the whole program if I tried to explain it thoroughly, but it's called a limited unscreened admissions process. All 88,000 eighth graders in New York City have to fill out a high school choice form where they rank 12 schools, 1 through 12, and then their names are put into a lottery, and they try to fill up seats at the schools based upon their preference. And so we get students, generally about 80% of our students have ranked us 1, 2, or 3. And they're from all 5 boroughs. There's no test to get in. It's not based on any aptitude or merit. It's simply how high you rank the school is the only way that you can help determine whether or not you'll come. So it gives us a really amazingly wide range of kids, as you can imagine.
And I would ask you, Murray, what a typical day is like at the New York Harbor School, but everything I read indicates there's more varied approaches day to day. But so let me change that and ask you what a kind of week of educational instruction might look like at the Harbor School.
Well, every student has to choose after their freshman years when we're introducing students to New York Harbor. So for a freshman, you will be out on the water in one site, one of 18 sites throughout the whole harbor, one entire day every 2 weeks. And you'll be visiting Newtown Creek, you'll be rowing, you'll be sailing, you'll be meeting people who work on the harbor, you'll be learning about the built environment, the natural environment. And you're also learning in that freshman class about our 6 career and technical education programs. At the end of your freshman year, you have to choose one of those 6 programs, and then you'll be taking your sophomore year, you'll take a class in that program every day. And then in your junior and senior year, every other day, you'll take 3 classes in a row in that program, so that you have these longer blocks where students can go out scuba diving, or they can go out and spend time actually in the field or driving boats or growing oysters. And so we have those longer blocks in the afternoons for the juniors and the seniors. In your spring of your senior year, you're in an internship in that same field that you chose.
Okay, and so you're getting a sense for how it works with the New York Harbor School. We're talking to Murray Fisher, the founder of the New York Harbor School. And as we mentioned, Rochester could get its, I would say, a similar approach at a new school called the Rochester River School that, if all goes well, could open by the fall of 2016. Now, one of the co-founders is Jerickson Pichardo, who has experience with both, a co-founder of the Rochester River School. But Jerickson, you were not just, you were a graduate of the New York Harbor School, first of all, and a very high-achieving graduate. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right? You did very well. Murray, am I underselling him? He was a pretty good student, huh?
Well, he was a valedictorian, so that's the highest-achieving student in his class. I don't think you can do any better than that.
You're a valedictorian, Jerickson, and you graduated from the New York Harbor School in what year?
2011.
You're getting ready to be done, or you are done now at Hobart?
I am. Yeah, I'm graduating next Sunday, actually.
All right. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And as a student in the New York Harbor School, take me back a little bit to why you ended up there in the first place. How much did you know about it going in? Did you start as a freshman there?
I did start as a freshman.
Okay.
And my story is pretty interesting when I started at the Harbor School, because my parents did not know anything about like the high school system in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently came from the Dominican Republic at that time, and I barely spoke any English. So when I selected my schools, I only had four schools listed on my application form, and the Harbor School was the last one. Yet it was the only one that I was accepted into. Coming into the Harbor School, I did not have any experience with the environment. I didn't know anything about the river. I didn't know anything about the New York Harbor. And luckily, like, it was an advisor that told me, you should apply to that school because they do a lot of cool stuff in the river. And I was like, oh, well, perfect. I'll just try it out. And then when I got there and I got into the class Intro to the Harbor, that's when I really got engaged into environmental stuff, because I was able to look at oysters going sailing. I had never been on a boat, not to mention that I did not know how to swim when I first started at the harbor school.
Now, where did you grow up?
I was born in the Dominican Republic, and then I came out around at the age of 11, and I grew up around Cypress Hills, Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. And that's like the farthest thing away from the water, aside from Bushwick as well. Okay. And that's where I started at the harbor school.
It's so interesting. So you're not someone who was a water kid growing up, yet you go to the harbor school. By the end of freshman year, did you get a sense for this is the place for me? Did you feel it was right?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the professors were great. The experience that I was having there was amazing. I learned how to swim. I was doing things that I had never done in my life before. And I felt like the more I got into the school, the more things I was doing every single day, and you know, it kept me engaged the whole time. There were times that I'll be like, I don't want to keep going to school, but the school kept bringing different things into my schedule that kept me into the school.
And he ends up becoming valedictorian. Murray Fisher, founder of the New York Harbor School, he's talking about something that I think is maybe overlooked until college, which is theory versus practice. We've talked a lot on this program in recent weeks about college courses, college major, and students in various fields waiting until their junior, senior year of college before they get practice as opposed to theory. And it sounds like at the New York Harbor School, you get them in the water and you get them sort of doing things, not just learning from a book right away.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If that question was for me, you don't want to take it from Jared.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that is a sort of essential element, I think, of our pedagogy here. Another big part of it that I think is fascinating to watch is that it seems to me that, you know, one of our teachers describes this best. Jerickson knows our teacher, Brendan Malone. He says that adults complain that young people don't take responsibilities, and yet adults aren't willing to provide the circumstances and the freedom for kids to be responsible. And so we work very hard to create learning environments that are safe, that are engaging, but that are also giving kids lots more responsibility than they're used to having. Whether that's Jerickson scuba diving in New York Harbor because he has to help build an oyster reef, or whether that's 15-year-olds driving a boat like I was just out with this morning. There's just so, or whether it's, you know, in the shop operating, you know, power equipment, there's so many places where people from the outside would say, oh my gosh, I can't believe public school students in New York City, high school students are doing this work. But we've got to start getting back to the idea of how productive and how engaged young people can be. And then all of a sudden, they get more excited about their learning, and they get more engaged, and next thing you know, they're coming to school more. We have an over 90% attendance at Harbor School, even though the average commute just to the ferry terminal is 45 minutes. So you're talking about at least an hour commute on average, and yet we're over 90% attendance for a limited unscreened school in New York City with that long of an average commute. It's just incredible, and it's because kids feel like their learning is applied. It's part of a larger project, which is the Billion Oyster Project. It's also because they're given a lot of responsibility that they're not in very few settings. So I think it's definitely a big part of what we do here.
Forgive the pun. We're going to be diving into the Rochester River School in just a moment, but I want to make sure I hit this point again that Murray just brought up, which is attendance and then the logical question of graduation. And for our listeners who might think, hey, New York Harbor School, sure, 90% attendance, probably a higher graduation rate, but what are your socioeconomics? You know, do you have any advantages that would give you those numbers, Murray? So what's the basic backdrop of socioeconomics at your school?
Right now at Harbor School, and we've been seeing a little bit of a demographic shift, actually, Evan, since we were in Bushwick. Our students are coming from all over the city, every ethnic and socioeconomic, geographic, and academic background. So we've seen a little bit of a shift, and right now we actually mirror the public school population in New York City almost exactly. We're 84% of our students are non-white. And 70% or 69% of our students live below poverty. And so those numbers are pretty typical for New York City Public School. So I think it makes it a really exciting learning environment for sure.
Absolutely. And so your daily attendance is around 90%. And what is your graduation rate?
2 years ago, it was 86%. Last year, it was, I think, 75%. And this year, we'll definitely be over 80%. Still always work to do on that. But if you, in terms of if you put us alongside other schools with the same or similar demographic, you know, we're definitely towards the top. And we also have a college office that's privately funded. You know, one thing that we've had to do here, and this is the, you know, another hard part of creating this kind of education, is a lot of the things that we've described, including our college office, are privately funded. So we're a public school that hasn't yet found the long-term source of public funding for its programs. So we rely on partners and individuals and corporations and foundations to help us essentially bridge that gap.
If you're just joining us on this Education Friday, you're hearing from Murray Fisher, the founder of the New York Harbor School, which has served as a kind of inspiration for the forthcoming Rochester River School, a school that could open as soon as the fall of 2016. The co-founders are here, and in our second half hour, we're going to be able to talk with them in depth about plans for Rochester. But I want to hit that point a little bit more, Murray. You talk about funding, and even though you're a public school, I was wondering throughout this conversation, you offer the core subjects. Of course you do. You have to have students graduating with core subjects, college prep, and everything else goes with it. Then you offer the specialized maritime education. Do you need to spend more on your staff, and do you have a larger staff because you need to have people who can teach, whether it's swimming, diving, the work that you do with oysters and everything else? Is your staff larger and more expensive because of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And what we're trying to do now is, like any pioneer, I think, we've had to cobble together the funding for that staff as we've built the curriculum. But now we have 6 state-approved career and technical education programs, which means that the state agrees that these are programs that are valuable, that meet industry standards, that meet college standards, and that therefore we are in the midst of making the argument, therefore that deserve more public funding for them. And so, you know, if the country, if the city wants to train young people for emerging careers related to being on and around and managing our marine and our water and our aquatic resources, it's going to cost more money. And so that's the case that we're currently making. We obviously hope to make that case with the Rochester River School as well, because the private fundraising burden here at the New York Harbor School is a difficult model to replicate. And being in New York City, I think that we have sort of more access to that private support maybe than other cities. And so we're currently in the middle of making that case for the more public support.
Jerickson Pichardo, co-founder of the Rochester River School and a valedictorian in 2011 of the New York Harbor School. Why do you think, Jerickson, the New York Harbor School has had a graduation rate of 75% to 86%, is essentially the same demographics and socioeconomics as an average New York City public school? It's much higher on daily attendance and graduation. And for our listeners in our area, it's been well publicized. Rochester City School District's graduation rate has been in the low 40s. So we're talking about a school that is double that number. It is a remarkable achievement. You were a student there. You were the valedictorian there. Why is that happening there? Why do you think?
I think that the reason behind this happening is not only because you have good teachers, but it's also because the students are learning by experience. So the experiential learning is what's keeping the student there as well. Personally, if I did not have the experience outside of the classroom, I think that my experience at the Harbor School wouldn't have been the same. However, the teachers were amazing. We had a lot of great, you know, connections, but the programs that were offered at the Harbor School was what really kept me there. And now I'm only talking for myself because I can't talk by, you know, every other student.
Sure.
But I feel like that's what keeps a student, the experiential learning and being able to apply what you learn in a classroom into your community and into the field that you might end up working in later on.
It's a tremendous validation of this model, which could come to Rochester in the form of the River School starting next year. Murray, before I let you go, I want to talk about this oyster project, the Billion Oyster Project. I want to ask you and Jerickson about it. When did it start and why?
It started, I was working with our aquaculture teacher, Pete Malinowski, and we had been struggling for years. One of the aims originally in starting the Harbor School was to engage young people in this resource. And so what did that look like? It meant we were traveling to go rowing. We were traveling to go sailing. We were doing water quality testing. We were growing some oysters. But there was nothing that really could make them participate and take responsibility in a hands-on way and in a large-scale way. And so we actually just looked to, like anything else good, you got to look at what's the model. We looked to the Million Trees NYC, which is a massive initiative to plant 1 million trees in New York City by 2030, I believe. And that that initiative was underway and successful. And we thought, well, what's the aquatic analog of that? How do we engage the community in restoring New York Harbor? And it turns out if you start looking back into the history of the harbor, this was an oyster ecosystem dominated. This was an oyster-dominated ecosystem that had 200,000 acres of oyster reefs. And that would have been the largest navigational hazard for Henry Hudson sailing into the harbor in 1609 were these oyster reefs. And now they're none, and no one remembers them. And the last person who would have eaten an oyster from New York Harbor has died long ago. And so how do you bring back this essential organism into the ecosystem and into the city? And it turns out we started doing it and growing them with our students. And what was really amazing is at the same time, our six career and technical education programs were evolving. And they evolved in a way that they all relate to the Billion Oyster Project. So the aquaculture kids grow the oysters. The marine biology students do the tests and the experiments and research around the reefs. Marine systems tech students have to maintain the boats. They also build oyster condos. Then you've got ocean engineering students that have to put submersible ROVs to help measure water quality around the reefs. And then you have scuba divers who actually do the building and monitoring of the reefs. And vessel operations students drive the boats for the reef dives and for going and finding new sites. And so you've activated the entire student body through their career training programs to help restore New York Harbor, and that makes it part of a citywide effort. We now have 50 school partners and 100 partners around the city, and it's become a huge way for the entire city to restore this massive urban degraded ecosystem.
Yeah, remarkable. Jerickson, what was your specific role in working with oysters?
Well, working with the oysters, I was able to work with Pete Malinowski in the aquaculture lab growing some oysters, but I was also scuba diver. So my role was like putting down the oysters and building the oyster reefs when I was at the Harbor School. And that was like right at the beginning stages of the project.
And Murray, are students doing this during regular school hours? Are they doing it after school, extracurricular? How is it working?
Mostly the actual going out into the field and doing the work happens as a junior and a senior in those afternoon block classes. They start at 1, and we they're 3 classes long, and we made them late in the afternoon so that the scuba divers, for example, when they'll go out to Jamaica Bay, they won't stop scuba diving until it gets dark. And so on the days that they're out in the field, they will stay often well past the end of the school day. And that takes the really essential element of everything we're doing is it takes remarkable teachers who are not looking at their contract, but they're looking at how can I do the best work with and for my students, since that's obviously a huge part of what we've been able to accomplish here is attract and maintain really amazing teachers.
Murray Fisher, founder of the New York Harbor School, can you stick around just a bit more as we continue the conversation, Murray? You have just a few more minutes for us?
Sure.
All right,
sure.
Let's take a very short break. We're going to come back and talk about how the parallel might play out right here in Rochester. If you want to join the program and talk about your thoughts about this, you can call toll-free 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Talking about some remarkably ambitious educational models, both New York City and here in Rochester, next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me bring in my colleague Michelle Faust for just a moment as we continue this great conversation on education today. It's a very important week for us, and it is the last day of a very important drive.
That's right. As you know, because you've been listening to WXXI all week long, we're in Pledge Drive, and we want to hear from you, 454-6300, because you appreciate this kind of education reporting that you get right here on Connections on our Education Friday, health reporting that you get on Healthy Friday, and all of the other programs. Always interesting, insightful talk that brings the conversation to our community. If you appreciate that, and we know you do, 454-6300, or go online, wxxi.org/give.
Thank you so much, Michelle Faust. My colleague Michelle Faust popping in here. If you want to join the conversation, again, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. Talking to Murray Fisher, founder of the New York Harbor School. And in studio, Joel Helfrich and Jerickson Pichardo, co-founders of the Rochester River School, which is in development, based in some part on what the New York Harbor School has been able to do. And Jerickson is not only a co-founder of the Rochester River School, but a former valedictorian of the New York Harbor School. He's going to graduate in just a few days from Hobart. And Jerickson, let me ask Murray first. Let's embarrass Jerickson. He is been held in high regard. Just won an award. Murray, tell us about the award that Jerickson just won.
Well, we just had our first ever, this is the first time we've given out this award, which we called the Peter Matheson Award for Leadership in the Marine Environment. And it was in honor of a friend of mine and one of my heroes, Peter Matheson, who I consider to be one of the greatest advocates and activists and nature writers in the world, who died a year ago, April. We wanted to start recognizing an alumni who represented the ideals of Peter Matheson, someone who cares deeply about the environment, but also cares deeply about social justice, and who, you know, he's spent a lifetime connecting nature and the environment to social justice and to people. And so we had students, alumni were nominated, and teachers voted, and you're right, Jerickson was presented the first ever Peter Matheson Award at our fundraiser at the New York Yacht Club on March 18th, just a couple weeks ago.
Well, Jerickson, congratulations. And if you can carry your vision forward now here in Rochester, let's talk about what could come here. I'll start with you, and then I want to talk to Joel as well. What's your vision for what could happen in Rochester, Jerickson?
So my vision in Rochester is to do the same thing that was done in New York Harbor School, at the New York Harbor School and in New York City. So you may know, Rochester is struggling with their graduation rates, and they are underutilizing their assets. As you may know, Rochester has the Genesee River, Lake Ontario, the Erie Canal, and the nearby Finger Lakes. And a lot of the students here don't have access to the things that are in their backyard. So I want to be able to give back to these students that are not able to go into the water, just the same way I wasn't able to. So I'm just trying to give back and also bring out the principles of the New York Harbor School along with the humane education model.
We're going to talk in a moment about what humane education means. Joel Helfrich, co-founder of the Rochester River School, met Jerickson as Joel was a professor at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. And Joel, we've been talking to Murray about the mission of the New York Harbor School. I've been kind of laying it out that Rochester would be a parallel. What is your vision? How do you view the school launching perhaps next fall in 2016 going forward? What's your vision for it?
Well, I see what the Harbor School has done, trying to create the best place-based, ecosystem-centered school in the country. And I think that given the legacy and assets that are still here in Rochester, we have the ability to do something similar here, really focusing on these waterways, really focusing on these areas of the city that, like the river, it's underused, it's underappreciated, it's undervalued. And so my goal would be to try and reorient the city and reconnect the city to the river as well as surrounding waterways. One of the things that really struck me when I first met Jerickson was he came into my office and he said, "What do you know about the Harbor School?" And I said, "I don't know a darn thing." And the reason why he had asked me that question is because he thought that I would appreciate the work that these students had been doing, given my own personal interest in environmental stewardship and so forth. One of the things that caught my attention eventually after looking into the Harbor School was a set of comments that Bill Clinton had given at a fundraiser for the Harbor School, during which he said, basically, this is an awesome place. And then secondly, this model should be replicated in every single port city in the world. So I thought, you know, hey, we live in this port city. Why not try and create a similar thing here? We had initially thought we'd create a high school, and after some conversations, we realized that we were going to open a 5 through 12 school.
5 through 12, okay.
And so we'll open our doors hopefully in the fall of 2016 with fifth grade, add one grade per year so that eventually it'll be an eight grade school.
Okay. And Murray, just to Joel's point there, Bill Clinton saying this model should be in every port city in the country. Now Rochester is working on its version. Have you seen it replicated elsewhere?
Replicated, not really. What we have seen is, I would say, served as an inspiration for or a model for dozens. We have every month or two, there'll be a new group from Houston or from Amsterdam or from, you know, Asia, from all over the world, who will come through, educators, people from industry, who will come through and spend time at Harbor School, and we'll give them whatever curriculum we have, and they'll take it back to their city and sort of come up with their own version mm-hmm. of it. So replicated, we honestly are not quite at a place where we can say, here's the exact package that will work in your city. And I'm not even sure that I feel comfortable even saying that if we get to that point. We love the idea of people taking sort of the things that they think are most relevant back to their city. And so this is, you know, it's actually, this kind of thing is happening a lot with a lot of other groups around the country, but nowhere else where it's a graduate from the Harbor School, which is why it's caught my particular attention.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. So, Joel, I asked Murray about what a week of education at the Harbor School could look like. If you start in the fall of 2016 in Rochester with fifth grade only, and then again, as he said, fifth grade, then the second year, those same students will go all the way through. So fifth grade, fifth and sixth, fifth and sixth and seventh. Give me a sense for, say, fifth grade, say next year. What might a week of education look like? You're already handing it over to Jerickson, which is a good idea. Jerickson, what could a week of education at the Rochester River School look like?
So the way that I have been presenting it in the competitions that I've been at is like a day at the Rochester River School, and the way that I did it is like in a similar way that the Harbor School frames his schedule. So I start out with like an English class, which is related, in which students are able to learn about different multicultural views and different points of views, and which will help them to enhance a humane education. But then we have the math, the sciences, and then in the afternoon with the blocks, then we'll have projects like the Billion Bugs Project.
Billion Bugs Project. Billion we'll talk Bugs about that Project, in a moment. Yep.
Which we'll talk in a moment. And then we'll have as well full day experiences, just like at the Harbor School, out in the water, learning about the history of Rochester, learning about the community, and also volunteering in their community for the students.
Did you keep your wetsuit?
I did not, but... But I have a new one.
Noel, I imagine, and in the same way, I imagine, Joel, there will be specialized teachers for this kind of a project. Yes, Joel?
Yeah, from the very start, we've decided that we would love to have a number of specialized teachers. So just off the top of my head, our intention is to have some sort of a chef or a series of chefs who can prepare fresh, arguably likely plant-based foods throughout the week. And the students will be taking part in the creation and the growing of those foods and the harvesting of those foods eventually. We also anticipate that we'd have some sort of a full-time gardener / farmer / nutritionist. And so these are the types of positions that I think Murray alluded to, at least in our case, that likely state ed isn't going to pay for. And so we're thinking about, you know, those specialized positions and trying to figure out, you know, where we can plug those in and how can we pay for them.
Yeah. Murray, is it fair to say you're a public school, but it sounds more like a public-private hybrid in that you need some private funding for these specialized services?
Exactly. And actually, one of our problems is there isn't a clean way to describe exactly what we do. Some people think that we're a charter school, or they say you're a magnet school. We are a very unique public-private partnership that has developed over 12 years into the model that it is now, and and does require quite a bit of private funding. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And so for Rochester, I know, Joel Helfrich, it's the same situation. And the elephant in the room here is you've got this, an inspiration in New York City with the Harbor School that has done so well. You have someone like Jerickson, who is not only a valedictorian of that school, a graduate of Hobart, someone who has been successful in competitions. You heard Jerickson mention it, New York State Business Plan Competition, as recently as when, Jerickson? When did that happen?
That was about 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah. And you did pretty well.
Yes, I got in the competition. Well, the competition started out with 500 teams from the entire state. And then it was narrowed down to 74 teams in the finals in Albany. And we came out for our category, which is social nonprofit entrepreneurship. We came out in fourth place, and we also received the People's Choice Award.
Fourth place out of 500 ideas. So obviously there is a track record that appears to work. But the elephant in the room, Joel, is whether the Rochester City School District wants it, whether the city of Rochester wants it, and whether you can get some private funding for it. Now, I know that you already have a board, but what are you hearing from the city of Rochester and the Rochester City School District about the idea of a Rochester River School?
So just this week, we finally had some really great conversations with the school district. It is still our intention to see if it's possible to create a district school. But we are also simultaneously pursuing a parallel path where we intend to apply to the state for a charter. And so we're kind of going in the same direction, this parallel track, and we're hopeful that the district will eventually find its champion for our school. But again, there's still a number of unanswered questions. We believe that this model works. Obviously, the Harbor School is successful. And we think that we can do a similar thing here with Rochester. We're still waiting for the district to hopefully come through at the end of the day and say, hey, we support this.
Okay. Why start in fifth grade? Harbor School in New York City is 9 to 12. Why did you want to start in fifth?
Well, right from the start, we learned from a number of people on various points of various perspectives of the political scale that starting a school in ninth grade was going to, we would have to do so much remedial work, essentially, to try and get these students up to speed, who were in some cases 1, 2, maybe even 5 grade levels behind in reading and writing and math. And so we initially thought we'd create a high school, then we thought we'd create a middle school on, and then we finally settled on fifth grade, in part because a number of educators have stated that something happens or some things happen at the middle school level where kids start to get disconnected from school. And so our belief is that fifth grade is that kind of sweet spot. That's based on also existing models that work, not only within the charter schools, but elsewhere. And so, you know, we've kind of latched on to this 5 through 12 model.
You're not here to make any guarantees. I know it's too early anyway. But you look at the educational success at the Harbor School. You look at 75 to 86% attendance, graduation. I should say 90% attendance, 75 to 86% graduation. Rochester would flip for those kind of numbers, Joel. Do you get the sense, do you believe going into this that that is possible here?
Oh, I wholeheartedly believe it. In December when we talked on air, I said something to the effect of, I haven't worked on something, you know, in the last 21 years that I believe in as much as the school. And so I think that it's definitely possible here, and I think that we can make it happen. So, you know, with a couple of extra bumps from the district and maybe from the city, maybe some folks adding volume to our voice, I think that we can make the school a reality and we can make change. We're not going to be the game changer for the district by any means, but I think that in some small or maybe even perhaps large way, we're going to help with graduation rates, attendance rates, and also dealing with some of the socioeconomic issues and community-based issues that we see in Rochester.
You want to bring in a humane educational model. We've talked to Zoe Weil on this program, the founder of that approach. I know you're a great admirer of hers. Tell me a little bit about what humane education means, Joel.
So, I mean, it has at its core 4 key components. So it has, first off, human rights. Secondly, animal ethics. Thirdly, you know, you have issues of environmental stewardship, and then kind of wrapped into all that are cultural issues. And so we see humane education as the kind of lens through which we're going to create the school and its curriculum. And so the Harbor School is certainly a model of that to some extent. And we also have another model that we're looking to, which is the forthcoming Solutionary School in New York City, which is being created by the Institute for Humane Education. And they're creating a new humane education curriculum that we're hoping to use. It'll be open sourced, and we expect to take that curriculum and then be able to mold it for our uses here in Rochester.
What's the simple definition of what a solutionary is?
Solutionary, a doer. You know, how do you create students that will come up with solutions to all the myriad of problems that we face in our society today, whether it's here locally in Rochester or globally?
And one good example is you look at the Harbor School, what they've done with oysters. And as Murray Fisher described earlier in this hour, it's not just a project that, well, this will be helpful to learn about oysters. This is a very functional project. Murray, what's the short definition again on the benefit of having oysters in the harbor?
Well, they provide a myriad of ecosystem services. Mostly they provide habitat for thousands of species. They also filter the water a gallon an hour. And the third thing is that the oyster reefs historically provided protection against storms and wave energy. And so without them increasing frequency and intensity of storms is a real concern, obviously. And so oyster reefs and natural infrastructure has a role to play there as well. So none of that even touches on the fact that they could long-term even be a food source. It's all just currently ecosystem services.
So that's the Billion Oyster Project out of the New York Harbor School. Joel and Jerickson are already thinking about it. Jerickson mentioned the Billion Bug Project, and this is something most of our audience, if I asked you right now, what is the New York State insect? I don't know anybody. Our engineer, John Andrus, any idea? What's the New York State insect? What do you think? Any idea? I don't think he is. No? Joel Helfrich, what is the New York State insect? What do you think?
So it's the nine-spotted ladybug. The nine-spotted ladybug, it has a spot in the center of its back that goes onto both of its wings, and then there are four spots on either side, so a total of nine spots.
And how many do we have of those things around?
Not very many. In fact, for about 15 years during the 1990s until about 2006, it was thought to be extinct until it was rediscovered by a collection of school children on Long Island. And so we've taken that as our kind of first project, is to have both an educational component about this insect and then also have some sort of a conservation effort. And we've created what we're calling the Billion Bugs Project, the goal of which would be to release a billion nine-spotted ladybugs over a period of time, likely starting out on organic farms in upstate New York. And again, the goal of which would be to have both education and conservation as part of that project.
I know some people listening may say, but wait, aren't ladybugs just an annoying bug? Why are you bringing these guys back, Joel?
Well, I mean, similarly to the oysters, you know, they play a vital role. You know, farmers are always looking for pest control, and they munch on a great amount of aphids. And so if we can, you know, release these bugs, if we can have students doing science and math, tracking, counting, doing art projects and STEAM projects surrounding this one species, which, by the way, was also recently listed by the DEC, the New York State DEC, as a high priority species. If we can have them doing that, we think that it has real implications for not only our community, and not only the good luck, hopefully, of our community, which these ladybugs bring, but also use in terms of agriculture.
You already have Cornell on board?
The Cornell University entomologists a number of years ago created what they've called the Lost Ladybug Project, which encourages people to whenever they find any ladybug, to take a photograph of it and to submit it to the Cornell entomologists. They then create maps that show where these species are becoming more rare, where they're becoming more plentiful. They're trying to figure out why, of course. And so they believe that we could create this Billion Bugs Project. It actually might wind up being way more than a billion bugs at the end of the day.
When it comes to understanding what drove them out, though, can you really bring back ladybugs without teaching students and kind of getting your head around why aren't they around anymore?
Yeah, so biologists generally, when they think about reintroducing a species to a certain area, try to figure out why they became so rare or in decline or what have you. Given the species, given that it's an insect, given that it should be fairly straightforward to try and have them reproduce, and that we can get fifth graders doing the growing the plant material, growing the aphids, releasing them, doing all that work, the Cornell entomologists have basically assured us that this would be a project that we could answer some of those same questions, perhaps. So if you track these species after releasing them, we might be able to find out some of the reasons why they were in decline in the first place. So getting at some of those same questions, but through different means.
Jenna Runt writes to us and wants to know what kind of jobs come out of this kind of education. I'm going to start with Murray. It's a good question. Murray, how would you answer Jenna's question?
I would answer just right here in the port of New York, there are 300,000 jobs related to the port. And those are jobs that are an aging workforce. And the big question that people running ports around the country and shipping companies and everybody is, where is our next generation of people who are going to work in this industry? People don't know about the maritime industry. And so, for example, SUNY Maritime, which is the state maritime college where we send some students, and we'd like to send more, has 100% job placement rate, and that with a starting salary of $75,000. And that's a state school that's located in the Bronx, is in New York City, and has virtually zero New York City public school students that attend it. And so we're trying to drive students into those careers is one area. The other area is, if you think about the investment that this region is seeing in its marine environment, there's never been anything like it. $60 billion for the Sandy-affected region to really rebuild the waterfront. That's one. Then you have Newtown Creek as a Superfund site for $750 million remediation. Gowanus Canal is a second Superfund site. That's going to be $600 million in remediation. And you have upgrades to the sewage treatment system that are $6 billion. All of these jobs are related to marine science and marine engineering. Very few kids from New York City public schools envision working in those fields. And so for us, there's a huge emerging field related to how we best manage our marine resources. Mm-hmm. And that's without even going into aquaculture as an emerging place for sustainable source of protein. So there's it's really exciting to see how folks are coming to us saying this is exactly what we want young people to be trained for.
Now in our last couple minutes, Joel Helfrich and Jerickson, same question. What do you see, Joel, as a potential benefit for students who go through this educational curriculum if there's a Rochester River School, jobs, economic development, and more?
Well, I think, again, real-world applications and projects are important. You know, it's one thing to talk about certain things. It's another to actually do them. And so, I mean, I think that maritime-based jobs are great. And as Murray said, there's a lot of room for people to engage in those professions. But I also think, more broadly, you have a number of environmental and sustainability-based jobs that we're either seeing that we currently have or they're coming online. And so I see that there's a great advantage here in Rochester for those types of positions as well.
Jerickson, how would you answer that?
Well, I would agree with Murray and Joel. And something else that they forgot to mention was like the things that you could do not only in the maritime environment but also in land. Like in Rochester, there's a lot of poverty. There are a lot of places where they don't have fresh food. They don't have access to fresh food. So through our school, with a hydroponic system, we'll be able to hopefully create greenhouses that will allow students to grow food and actually give it back to the community. So that's a job. But also, there are other jobs like within the boat building industry. Some of the things that at the Harbor School students are doing, like the boating engineering and things like that, those are things that are also very important. And not a lot of 18-year-olds come out with a professional certification right out of high school. Like, I came out of the Harbor School with scientific diving certification, and not a lot of young people have these type of things right after graduation.
We will be following the progress of the Rochester River School as it goes forward here. And I want to thank Murray Fisher, the founder of the New York Harbor School, for taking the time for us this hour. Murray, congratulations on all the success down there, and thank you very much.
All right, Evan. Thank you so much.
Jerickson, always great to talk to you, and I know we'll talk more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joel Helfrich, before I let you go, I asked you to come on and just give us an update. And so this is your chance to mention very briefly, what do you want to hear from the community as you try to get this thing going?
We hope to have some community meetings coming up. And so we would love to see as many parents and as many teachers show up to those meetings and share with us their ideas and support.
And how do they follow the progress?
So we have a Facebook page. It's under the Rochester River School.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good luck to you, and we'll talk to you again soon on this program.
Thank you.
Joel Helfrich and Jerickson Pichardo, the co-founders of the Rochester River School. Short break, and next hour we're talking about transgender health resources. Stay with us.